The title of the message today is actually part two of the message I gave last time, which is When Life Gets Hard, a Message of Hope. So this is part two. And it's been about 6 weeks or a little over since I gave the part one. And it's been an eventful 6 weeks. And I've been thinking about it this morning. I may stray away from my notes some and just relate some of the things that we've been through that has had God's hand in it. Because just like before, the title, When Life Gets Hard, A Message of Hope, my focus is on the hope. You know, all of our lives get hard at times, but we've always got to remember there is hope. And maybe it will be encouraging to you if I share some of the experience that we've been through in just the last 6 weeks that clearly had God's hand in it. And it didn't always seem that way. You know, like seems like most all the time when we go through something, we don't know why we're going through it. We don't know why it turned out that way, because that's not the way we would have chosen. But then, you know, if we pay attention, then we can see, well, yeah, actually it turned out really well, you know, when we stand back and look at it a little bit. So I'm going to recap a little bit of the message from last time, and then I'm probably going to stray from my notes and tell some personal stories that we have. And the purpose for me telling my stories is hopefully it will spark your stories, because everybody's going through something. Each one of you, no doubt, are going through something. So hopefully my stories will help encourage you in what you're going through. But just as a bit of a recap, last time I discussed life expectancy. You know, we seem like we all, or at least I do, get this expectation of the longevity of life. And but you know, it's all across the board. There's Methuselah lived to be 969 years. That's not necessarily our life expectancy. You know, might give you something to shoot for, but good luck. King David lived to be 70. When my mother was born in 1929, the life expectancy for births at that age was 54. If you made it through the first year, then it went up to 60-something, but they had a high infant mortality rate in 1929. And I'd like to welcome everyone watching on the webcast. We always really appreciate you joining us. We wish you could be here with us. If you can, please try to do so whenever that might be possible. I know some of you live way too far away, but actually I don't know how often, but we've had people watching from Switzerland and different places. There's planes that fly from Switzerland to here. We've done that before. A beautiful country, too. So, you know, everybody here, no doubt, is going through something, and those of you watching on the webcast, too, no doubt you're going through something. So what is the end game? What's God's purpose? What's the deal? Why do we have to suffer? Just to recap the points, I gave 3 points last time, and I may throw in a little bit more on a couple of these points. But the first point is draw close to God and trust Him. And I want to read the song that Linda and Wayne and Joanne just did. I want to read the lyrics to that, because it's certainly appropriate for this subject. The Father has a plan, though it's hard to see it now. Have you ever been there? You're going through something and it's hard and you don't understand why you're going through it. My experience is that's most all the time for me. You know, maybe sometime years later I see why I went through it and what the benefit was from it. But you feel you're walking all alone, but He is there, no doubt. When the storm around you rages and you're tossed to and fro, when you're faced with life's decisions, not sure which way to go, then the chorus, stand still and let God move. Standing still is hard to do. When you feel you have reached the end, He'll make a way for you. Stand still and let God move. When the enemy surrounds you and the walls are closing in, when the tide is swiftly rising and you wonder where He's been. Friend, there never was a moment that His arms weren't reaching out. That's a good mental picture to keep. You can rest assured and be secure. God is moving right now. you remember in, wasn't it the book of Daniel when God had dispatched, wasn't it Gabriel, to go and intervene in a situation and he was withheld for 2 weeks by the forces of darkness. But God was, that was already in movement then. You know, the recipient on the other end was waiting, but it was already in action, or it was in movement, getting ready to go into action. So you can rest assured and be secure, God is moving right now. An experience I had about 3 weeks ago, Mom was in the nursing home. I had her moved up to Gladewater, just a couple of doors down from us, which is where she wanted to go to. And on a Wednesday, that was three weeks ago, this past Wednesday, the nursing home head, the head of nursing called me and told me that I needed to get Mom put on hospice. And actually, we had planned to leave to go out of state to visit our kids a couple of days before that. But Mom wasn't doing well, and I was trying to figure out what to do. So I made arrangements to get the same hospice service that we used with Linda's mother, because they were so wonderful, and I wanted the continuity of using that same service. So it took about a day to get that arranged. And then I was over at the nursing home getting that arranged. Well, I got it arranged, and then the financial administrator told me, they already told me I needed to get Mom on hospice. Then they told me, well, but if you put her on hospice, then Medicare or Medicaid, neither one's going to pay for it, and your mother will have to pay, I think it was $176 a day, which figures out to about $5,300 a month. Well, Mom didn't have $5,300 a month, and we've been through a lot lately, too, and I didn't either. And I just told the lady, I said, I don't need that curveball right now. I've got too many things I'm trying to juggle. And I had had, I guess it was 2 days before that, I'd had a meeting there with the staff. There was six of them, like they typically do at a nursing home, where they call it a family meeting and you meet with, you know, the different people on the staff, which was really good, and they were all really helpful. And but I explained to them, you know, some of what I was dealing with, and I told them, you know, I'm doing the best I can. But so they were pulling for me. And sometimes that's a good thing to remember, is sometimes we need to make other people aware of what all we're dealing with. And it's been amazing just in the last 3 weeks how people have, different people that I wouldn't have expected, have gone to bat for us. So anyway, they told me that Mom had to be on hospice, but if she's on hospice, they, you know, Medicare and Medicaid won't pay for it. Mom would have to pay it. And so I told the administrator, I don't need that curveball right now. It had already been a really stressful day, and that was only making it worse. And then I went home, and I had a phone call to return that I hadn't had time to return it for a couple of weeks. So I've been stressed out all day, and I'm sitting on the back porch, and about five, this never happened in the 22 years we've lived there. I'm sitting there on the back porch. I'll mention Joe because I'm convinced that we all, at times, God allows Satan just to pile things on. So I'm sitting there, finally return this phone call, and this 5-foot-long snake just goes right across the porch, right in front of me. I'm like, really? You know, at this point, I'm pretty sure what's going on. I could be wrong, but when you see so many things piled on, I don't think that snake just happened by there. So I went and got me a piece of hardware, and first shot, he was dead. The next four shots were target practice. I was, he hit in the firewood, some firewood I still had stacked on the back porch, and I asked God, I was going around looking for him, and I asked God if he would just rebuke Satan and drive Satan away and give me a break. And then it occurred to me that God's grace is sufficient. So then I prayed that prayer. And that it was sufficient. It was a little too much for the snake, but he'll be all right. But we're perfected through our trials. And, you know, have you ever known of an amazing singer or amazing athlete or any world champion of anything that got there without a struggle? No. I'd heard a story about, it was cod fish, I think, where they would take these cod and they would ship them to the market. And by the time they got to the market, they would just be like, they'd be no good. They'd just be really, looking for the right word, weak, or just didn't have any body to them. And they eventually found out a way to fix that is there's a fish that is a predator to the cod. And they found out if they ship these fish live in a container and put this predator in with the cod, the cod had to stay alert to save their life, or this other fish would eat them. And then the cod were good after that because of the struggle, because of what they had to deal with. We're the same way. It's important, too, to keep in mind that sometimes God gives us a wide spot, just like in Psalms chapter 31, verses 7 through 9. You know, sometimes God knows what we can take, and with His help, we can take a whole lot more than what we think we can take. But then God also knows when we need a wide spot, and He gives that to us from time to time. Linda and I had one of those about a year ago. It was pretty nice. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. I really love this friend. He's high energy, intense, and we were talking about trials, and he was telling me that we were discussing this, and he was telling me that you know, he'll have a trial and it's intense, and then at some point he'll tell God, you know, I need a break. Can you give me just a little break? And then let's get right back at it. Let's go back at it hard after I have a little break. And I thought, that's a pretty amazing perspective. And that's actually the pretty much the way it works out, is my experience. So the second point I mentioned in the first time was to seek and accept encouragement. Encouragement is one of the gifts, and I think it's a good idea for us all to know who the encouragers are in our lives, and when we're going through something, to let them know, if need be, that, you know, we could use some encouragement. Also, the book of Psalms. The book of Psalms is so encouraging. It's a nice, easy read, you know, a little bite-sized verses. And then the third point I mentioned before was to ask for prayers from one another. You know, sometimes we get tired and weak, and I know I've felt everyone's prayers here and lots of other people's prayers for several months. And I use the word I can feel because I can, and it's energizing. And I hugely appreciate that. Which reminds me of the poem you're probably all familiar with, Footprints in the Sand. And I want to read that. Footprints in the Sand. One night I dreamed a dream as I was walking along the beach with my Lord. Across the dark sky flashed scenes from my life. For each scene I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. After the last scene of my life flashed before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand. I noticed that at many times along the path of my life, especially at the very lowest and saddest times, there was only one set of footprints. This really troubled me, so I asked the Lord about it. Lord, you said once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the saddest and most troublesome times of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you the most, you would leave me. He whispered, "My precious child, I love you and will never leave you, never ever, during your trials and testings. When you saw only one set of footprints, that's when I carried you." And God does that for all of us. You know, it's it'd be good for us all to sit down and meditate and contemplate the times when God has carried us. My fourth point on beyond what I gave last time is to do your part. When you're going through something, do your part. Pray like it all depends on God, and work like it all depends on you. And you have to use balance and wisdom in that, because sometimes we might, like if someone's sick, I had the opportunity to visit with someone a couple of weeks ago that lost their wife 14 years ago in a painful battle with cancer. And, you know, sometimes we have to use wisdom. We have to ask for wisdom because, you know, we want our mate to get better. But on the other hand, we don't want to totally ruin their quality of life in doing that. So we have to have a balance of doing what we can to help them get better. And I'm just speaking in general. I'm not talking about specifically of anybody. But we need to pray for a balance and wisdom in what's actually going to help them get better and what's going to be detrimental to the life they've got left. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of times we're too close to the forest to see the trees. Sometimes it's good to get the perspective from a friend or somebody else that's not right in the middle of it constantly like you are. Another point, the fifth point, is be willing to accept offers of help. And I have to admit, that's something I have trouble doing. It doesn't come easy. I'm trying to get better at it. I think maybe I'm getting better at it. You know, Galatians 6:2 tells us to bear one another's burdens. And I can't begin to tell you how much my mother died 3 weeks ago. And at the visitation and at the funeral, I can't begin to tell you just how overwhelmingly wonderful it was with all the people that came to the visitation and to the funeral, the food that was sent, the cards. I mean, I got a whole top of my credenza at home is covered with cards. Just absolutely wonderful. And I think, I don't know, you know, I'm reminded of when Elijah thought that he was the only one left serving God, and God told him that he had 7,000 others that have not bowed their knee to Baal. And, you know, so I don't know how this fits into my paradigm, but just my observation, I don't know much. I don't know where all God has people, but I feel hugely blessed to live in this area of East Texas where there's so many people in the body of Christ, just within a, pick a number, a radius of 50 miles, the majority of them probably. And there's probably, no doubt, people watching online that would give anything to have that many people that close, or just a few people that close, just a few believers of the body of Christ nearby where they could fellowship with them. But, you know, like I said, I don't know. You know, there may be other places. I hope there are other places in the world that maybe groups we're totally unaware of, which is okay because we're unaware of a lot of stuff. But, you know, I hope there are lots of other places in the world. But that's really beside the point, is we're hugely blessed in this area to have all of you and then all the other congregations around. You know, we've this past January, my family moved here 50 years ago from Indiana, and I went to Imperial School just my senior year, my brother and I did. And how many people here know Richard Lingle? Richard and I, we pretty quickly became friends in my senior year of high school. Richard knew everybody. I knew nobody. And I was just in awe of Richard. And no matter where he went, he knew people. People knew him. He would talk to them. And I feel kind of like that now. After being here 50 years, we know a lot of people. And it's really nice. It's really nice to have so many friends and brethren that we're close to. As far as accepting help from people, you know, there's a lot of really good-hearted people out there that when you're going through something that want to help you. And, you know, in any way they can, from, you know, whatever, from sending food to cards or whatever they can do. Sometimes we need to be careful and ask God for wisdom in accepting some things that people offer, even though they offer it with a, you know, the best of intentions. There are some things that are offered that actually aren't helpful, like if, you know, somebody needs to be on a certain diet, and then it wouldn't be helpful just to have random food brought over, because then that's going to make them worse if they don't stick to the diet that they need to be on. But actually, we've got an ice chest sitting down here in the hallway. Some kind-hearted people that sent some food for us and went to all the trouble to make the diet that Linda and I need to be on. So we hugely appreciate that. But as kind as some offers are, you know, we have to use discretion and not, we got to make sure we make the main thing, and not just try to be gracious and accept something that's really going to be detrimental rather than helpful. My sixth point is embrace the trial. I think that's a really important one. God knows what we're going through. And it's there for a reason. It's to make us a stronger and more godly person. It is to transform us into God's image. Let's turn to Romans chapter 8, and we'll read verses 17 and 18. Romans chapter 8, verses 17 and 18. Verse 17, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. From suffering to glory is the heading in my Bible above this next verse. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. So it is worth the suffering, because God has a huge future ahead for us if we just walk with him. Let's turn to Psalms chapter 66, and we'll read verses 10 through 12. Psalms chapter 66, verses 10 through 12. For you, O God, have tested us. You have refined us as silver is refined. You brought us into the net. You laid affliction on our backs. You have caused men to ride over our heads. I think one translation I read last night put it to run over us. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out to rich fulfillment. That's what God's in the process of doing with our pain, is bringing us through to rich fulfillment. The next point, point number seven, is to ask God to show you ask God to show you what he desires to change about you through the trial. There's a purpose for it, so the best thing we can do is pay attention and meditate on, okay, what could the purpose of this be? What potential benefits are there? Let's turn to Psalms chapter 139. And we'll read verses 23 and 24. Psalms 139, verses 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. and see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. That's pretty sobering. Pretty sobering prayer. Pretty sobering thing to ask God. You know, God does search our heart, but we need to be aware that He is searching our heart, and we need to do everything that we can to follow Him. So let's meditate on the various things we can do to learn through our trial. And then my last numbered point is, realize maybe it's not all about you. You know, so we tend to think, I know I do, I want to think it's all about me. Well, it's not. When Jesus Christ came to earth, it wasn't all about Him. It was all about what He was doing for us. He came to serve us, to do something for you and me and everyone that's ever lived. And so maybe what you're going through is so that someone else can see your example, your good example. There's a lot of reasons it could be, but realize it's not just about you or me. My experience has been that I can't remember ever going through what to me was a severe trial and knowing at the time why I was going through it. Sometimes, yeah, years later, I can look back and I can see why I went through that trial. I'm not talking about some stupid thing I did myself. There's been plenty of those, and I pretty much recognize those. If I drop the sledgehammer on my foot, that's why my foot hurts. But there's been cases where I've had what seemed like really severe trials, and then years later I can see what the benefit of that was. And then eventually, even though it can be really hard to say, I develop an appreciation for having gone through that trial. That would have been hard to say when I was going through it. But that's the truth. And I'll mention again that when this life is all over, it's all said and done, I become more and more convinced continually that we will realize that our biggest trials were also our greatest blessings. Because that's when we're setting up straight, paying attention, seeking God for answers. I want to discuss, too, the fact that we need to treasure those that God has put in our life. You know, I had back here several months ago, I gave a message on things that we treasure, and I had a little treasure chest up here, and I pulled things out of it. If I had a treasure chest like that, you know, the type you picture when you're a kid, you know, it's got a rounded top, this old antique treasure chest, and it's huge, and it's full of gold coins and $100 bills and rubies and you name it. The people God has put in our life, we would protect that treasure chest diligently. But if we're not careful, we tend to take for granted the people that God put in our lives. And they're a much, much greater treasure than that physical treasure chest with gold and jewels and money in it. There's no comparison. So we need to make sure that we thank God for our mates and not take them for for granted, our children, our families, our friends, our brethren. We're hugely blessed in that way. And along with that thought, we need to keep in mind, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of my last message on June 29th about my wife's diagnosis that asked for your prayers. But in spite of that, we're on what I call a journey of hope. And I've been so busy with everything here lately, I haven't been able to really focus on that like we were and like I intend to. But hopefully here in a week or two, we can get through with the busyness and get some things wrapped up and get back to walking every morning and praying together and reading the Bible together and doing all those things. But along with that, we have to realize that none of us are promised tomorrow. Not one person here was promised tomorrow. We're not even promised this afternoon. And so we need to to really be appreciative of the people that God has put in our lives. And we need to realize that every single day is a blessing. Every single day is a gift from God. And don't take it for granted. Don't take for granted your mate or your children, your loved ones, your friends, or the brethren. Life is very fragile. So let's consider just how blessed we are in this area of East Texas. And actually, I don't know of anywhere else on earth I'd want to live other than here. There's places that have more natural beauty. You know, there's mountains and ocean and cooler weather in August. I can think of a couple places I like to go in July and August. But seriously, even though our children don't live in this area, we like to go visit them a lot, which we did just 3 weeks ago. And actually, that's something I'll mention, too, is, you know, seeing God's hand in things. The nursing home told me on Wednesday I needed to put Mom on hospice. I think it's on Tuesday, and I got it set up on Wednesday. Our children live a two-day drive away. It's pretty hard two-day drive. And I have to do all the driving. And we had planned to be out there for the play that our grandson, 10-year-old grandson and 8-year-old granddaughter were going to be in. And we had planned to leave about 4 days earlier, but with everything going on with Mom, we put it off. And then I was going to just cancel the trip. But then I talked to the hospice nurse and the head nurse at the nursing home, and they both suggested we go ahead and go because they said, we think if you don't, you'll wish later that you had. So we went ahead and went with that. Had a hard two-day drive out there. Got there an hour and a half before our grandchildren's play. Got to see the play. 10 hours later, after we arrived, 3 o'clock in the morning, hospice called and said Mom died. She had just died. I was like, you know, I cannot turn around and drive 2 more days back right now. So I thought it through and I prayed about it and talked to the funeral home. So we put it off for, that was on 3 o'clock Sunday morning. So we put it off till the next Sunday. And, you know, that seemed like a very unfortunate thing to have going out there and then have to turn around and come back. But as I stepped back and looked at it and thought about it for the next 2 or 3 days, no, if I could do it, step back and look at it and make it where it would turn out the best, I think I would have had it happen just like it did. And my prayer had been for Mom since she had had the stroke that that she could, she was in a lot of pain. And Mom turned 90 years old June 18th, and she was always very sharp mentally. But after she had the stroke, she was out of reality most of the time. So my prayer had been that she could just peacefully go to her rest in her sleep. So after I got the call, and then I called back later that day when the head nurse, head nurse was on duty that was there when Mom died, and apparently that's just the way it happened. And so that was a huge blessing. And the last conversation I had with Mom, other than a very brief one when we stopped by there for about 2 minutes when we were headed out of town, you know, Mom's in the nursing home and she was thinking a lot about, She most of the time she thought she was either at our house or her house or there at the nursing home sometimes, and that they were throwing a big party because there's a lot of noise out there. And so anyway, so Mom, I went in the day before we went out of town and pulled up a chair there by Mom's bed and held her hand. And she said she could just barely talk, so, you know, it wasn't audible like I'm talking, but she said, I'm trying to figure out what's going on around here. And, you know, I'd have to put my face down. You try to, same thing I had to do with my dad before he died is he could barely talk, try to look at his lips some and listen real close too. And so I said, Mom, what's going on? He said, I love you very much. And a lot of other people love you a whole lot too. And there's a lot of people praying for you. And all these people going in and out, they're taking really good care of you. That's what's going on. And she got the biggest smile I ever remember seeing her. She just smiled from ear to ear. So I think that was a good memory for her, and I know it was a good memory for me. So let's not take our families and loved ones and brethren for granted. Let's really appreciate them and love them and let them know that we appreciate them and love them, just like we love all of you. And let's thank God for one another. I mentioned this in Mom's eulogy at her funeral that she was, when I was a little kid, she was our den mother and in the Cub Scouts. And Mom took us so many places. I mean, really educational places. We went to a potato chip factory and went to a place that made headstones, monuments for graves. Went to jail. Everybody should go to jail when they're a kid so they know what happens. You know, if you break the rules, there are rules. Seriously, that ought to be a course in high school, mandatory to get out of school, that you got to go to jail or prison and see what that's like. I don't mean to be in there, but you got to observe. But Mom took us a lot of places, and I was really amazed. I pulled up the chair there one of the last few days and mentioned that to her about all the places she took us in Cub Scouts. And I was shocked. She went on and mentioned several more that I had totally forgotten about. I really appreciated that. But 2 days after the funeral, I went over to Mom's duplex and going through some of the file cabinets where she told me the important papers were. And I wish I had this for Mom's eulogy. This is my one and only prop. In the top drawer, or one of the drawers, was this picture of our Cub Scout den with Mom standing back there. And it's amazing how young she looks. She's younger here than our daughter is by a few years. But, you know, my mom lived a good long life. She was 90 years old. God did not create us to live forever in this life. He created us to live this life so he can shape us into his image. And that involves some pruning and taking the lumps out. So that's why we're here. And I'll mention our good friend Wayne Woodring's kind father died at age 90 a few years ago. Mr. Woodring wisely said, "This world is just a stay-in place. Some people stay longer than others." And then he said, "Seems like just a short time ago I was throwing rocks in the creek," when he was a kid. But that's the way life is. It's, you know, you look back and it's pretty fleeting. So here's the deal. None of us get out of this alive. We're here for a purpose, and that purpose is to let God shape us and mold us into his image. We're not intended to live an eternity in this life, in this body, but to allow God to shape us and mold us. We will live forever in eternity once we're in God's awesome kingdom. So let's love those who God has put around us, who he has put in our life. If you have a broken relationship, maybe you should think about what you could do to fix it. And I'll tell you a personal example. is my oldest brother, who has leukemia. He's 4 years older than I am. And we've, Larry and I, my next older brother, the middle brother, Gary, we've always been close. But Larry was far enough ahead of me, 4 years older, that he was into different things than what I was, you know, because of age differences. And when we started attending church, he was, again, older, so he wasn't, maybe I was more moldable and he was less so, being, he would have been about 14. And we've never had a good relationship, not for 25 years anyway, and never really a close relationship. But during this last year, I wouldn't take anything for the relationship that Larry and I have developed. So my advice is, let's turn to Romans chapter 12, and we'll read verse 18. Romans chapter 12, verse 18. Just a short little verse with a lot of impact. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. And, you know, sometimes it's not possible, but it's not going to be possible. It's certainly not going to be possible if we don't do our part. But if we do our part, and, you know, sometimes just over time, sometimes maybe our intentions are not perceived as we intended them. But over time, you know, maybe if we do the right thing, if we do our part, that a broken relationship can be repaired. So treasure each and every day with your loved ones. One day when they're gone, you'll realize that this day was the good old days. You know, we're always looking, you know, we want to look back, whatever, 20 years or pick a number. But in actuality, we're living in the good old days right now. So let's take advantage of that. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 21. I'm sorry. We'll start in verse 1. I referred to this in the last message I gave, but I didn't have time to read it. I want to read it this time. Revelation chapter 21, verse 21. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And I love this verse 4. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away.